Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I want to invite you to open in your New Testament to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2 will at least be a beginning place for us this morning in our lesson. You know, when the Apostle Paul wrote this letter that we refer to as the letter to the Ephesians, he would describe Christians here in chapter 2 in the first couple of verses as those who were dead in the trespasses and sins in which they once walked, following the course of this world. And he would go on to say that we had actually walked the pathway of this world until it had become basically, you know, natural for us to do that. In verse 3, he talks about the fact that we were by nature, he says, children of wrath. And he didn't mean by that we were born that way. That's not the kind of nature he was talking about. But he was talking about the fact that it's what we had become. We had become that by long established practice. To live a life of sin became what we might call, what we would refer to as second nature. It just became a part of who we were. And then Paul went on to describe in the verses following that, the fact that God intervened on our behalf, and because of his great love for us, and the fact that he's merciful, that he saved us by his grace. Now, if that were the end of the story, I don't know many people who would have a hard time making it to heaven. If Christians were somehow immediately transported to heaven after being saved from their sins initially, we wouldn't have to worry about, you know, the constant wear of this world and people quitting on the Lord. But the truth is that being saved from our sins is only the beginning. And our citizenship at that point, yes, is in heaven. This world is not our home. Except for a while. We live here for a bit. And so our citizenship is in heaven, but we live our lives in this world. And because of that, we need to understand that there are some challenges that face us. Jesus, before he was put to death, would pray to the Father concerning his disciples in John chapter 17 and verse 15. And he would say on their behalf, I do not ask that you take them out of the world. That's not the answer. But that you keep them from the evil one. That's the answer. That's the Lord's will for us as well. And that raises a question. How can we live in the world and yet not be of the world? And so I want us to talk about that in our study this morning. There are three things that I want us to suggest along those lines as we pursue that course of thought. And the first thing that I want to suggest that can help us as we live in this world to not be of this world is to remember where we are. There we are. Remember where we are. We have to keep in mind what it means to live in this world. You see, the struggles that we face as Christians are a direct result of the fact that we live here. The devil is still active in this world. I doubt I have to convince anybody of that. He's as active as he's ever been, and the truth is that he's been very successful. He's worked hard to gain control of this world, and I doubt that we can expect him to give up what he has gained without a fight. I recognize, and you do too, that ultimately we serve a God who is in control. This is our Father's world, as we sometimes sing. But there's no doubt about the fact that the devil exercises a lot of control in the world in which we live. And Jesus described him in John chapter 14 and verse 30 as the ruler of this world. And the Apostle John in 1 John chapter 5 and verse 19 made the observation that the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. And what passages like that tell us is a little bit about the condition of the world in which we live. And we see that as we look out, don't we? And those who have been rescued from the domain of darkness, as Paul would refer to it in Colossians chapter 1 and verse 13, they can be sure that the devil's not content to just simply let them slip from his power. He's not going to just count his losses and move on. He has worked far too hard to get control of them to begin with, and he doesn't want to give up without a fight. To give up completely. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that he will do everything in his power to get back people who have been rescued from that domain of darkness as he possibly can. And the sad truth of all of that is, of course, that the devil's going to succeed with some. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 26, Paul spoke of people who needed to, quote, come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil, after being captured by him to do his will. And when you look at the context of that statement, he's not talking about, you know, the great mass of unwashed humanity, as we might call it. He is referring there to people who very much would have claimed to be Christians. People who would have said, yes, I'm a disciple of Jesus Christ. But they'd been captured by the devil to do his will. And despite the fact that we know what we can expect in this world, the fact that we know that we can expect opposition from the devil, we have to admit that sometimes we are far too comfortable with our surroundings, aren't we? Isn't that true? We're sometimes guilty of letting our guard down as if we don't really have anything to worry about as we go about living in this world. And the result is that we often fall prey to the one who is actively seeking to do us harm. Don't we sometimes live like this world is our home? We act like we're not living in territory that is occupied by the enemy, so to speak, but rather as though we are living among friends. And we do that despite the warning that we can't strike up a friendship with the world and yet still hope to be pleasing to God. In James chapter 4 and verse 4, James put it this way. He said, "Do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God?" Or as a different translation says, is hostility toward God. And James wasn't talking there about having friends who are not Christians or anything like that. That's not the point he was making. He was talking about warming up to the values of the world, where we begin to let that have an impact on who we are. We can't afford to become so comfortable in the world that we forget that we're not of the world. That's the point he's making. And as I said a moment ago, we're sometimes guilty of letting our guard down as if we don't have anything to worry about as we live here. And what we need to recognize, what we need to keep in mind, is that the devil has a plan for our downfall. Paul spoke of, in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 11, the schemes of the devil, or as one translation puts it, the tricks of the devil. And the truth is, he's always working on some kind of angle. But let me ask you this. How often do we really give much thought to him and the things that he is trying to accomplish? I think one thing we're told about the work of the devil is that he tries to harm us by setting a trap for us. You know, just a moment ago, we read from 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 26, and that's kind of the language that is used there. Paul referred to the snare of the devil. And what that says is that there are things in this world that we can get caught up in if we're not careful, that can entrap us if we don't use wisdom. Paul would say, or rather John would say in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16, he would talk about everything in the world, and he would say it is the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. And he was talking about the avenues through which the devil seeks to ensnare us. And the truth is that the devil can use any one of those things. He can use the lust of the flesh, or he can use the lust of the eyes, or he can use the pride of life, or he can use a combination of those things, or he can wrap it all up and use it all and come at us with every one of them together. He can use all of them. But the question for us is this. Are we really looking out for the snares that are placed before us as we go about living our lives? Do we really give much thought to what might be lying in our path as we make our way forward? I know Paul would say in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13 that God will not allow you to be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. Thanks be to God for that fact. But again, are we looking to avoid temptation before it arises? Can we say that we look for the way of escape when it does? I'll just tell you that you don't wait till you're neck deep in quicksand before you begin to take an interest in the situation. It just doesn't work well that way. And I believe the devil is first and foremost an opportunist. He chooses his battles wisely. James would say in James chapter 4 and verse 7, resist the devil and he will flee from you. He'd much rather find someone he can sneak up on. And that may be why Peter would say in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8 that we need to be sober-minded and be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. If we're not thinking straight, Peter says. If we're not on the alert, Peter says, then we can expect the devil's going to pounce on us. That's the point he's making. And so remember where you are and keep an eye out for danger. But there's a second thing that I want us to see. I want to suggest that it will help us to live in this world and yet not be of the world if we remember where we're going. We need to keep in mind that heaven is ultimately our home, that that's where we belong, that that's where our citizenship is. We sometimes sing the song that begins with these words, "This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue." But let me ask you this morning, how often do we really give that much thought outside of these walls? I mean, that's what we do here. We sing that song here. We think those thoughts here. But how much do we transfer this out there where we really need to keep that in mind? It's not too difficult to live within these walls and remember that heaven is our home. It's more difficult as you face people out there, as you face situations out there, as the temptations come out there. That's where we need to remember it. But how often do we do it? Truth is, it's easy for us to become stuck on the here and now. And to be stuck on the here and now, even as we claim that our greatest desire is to live with the Lord forever. You know, one thing we need to recognize is that this world is passing away. That's what the Apostle John would say in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 17. The world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever, John says. And we look out and you just look around. I can understand. This world looks like a permanent fixture, doesn't it? But it's not. And even if this world were a permanent fixture, let me go ahead and give you a little bit of information. We're not. And that ought to have an impact on where our focus is, shouldn't it? Shouldn't it make us want to contemplate things that are eternal in nature? Things that are abiding? Things that will last ultimately? One of the problems I think we have is that our schedules are sometimes so full that it's difficult for us to find time to really consider, you know, where we're going. You know, we pile up so many things that we have no hope of getting them all done. And what often gets pushed to the side is, you know, Bible study, prayer, meditation, time spent in other spiritual activities. I mean, let me ask you this. When was the last time you just sat back and thought about heaven and allowed that to motivate you as you live? When was the last time you did that? You see, when we fail to consider the grandeur of heaven, I think what we do is we rob ourselves of the motivation we need to stay the course. God has told us about heaven so that it will cause us to be determined to get there no matter what happens, no matter what goes on in the meantime. And he knows that if we take our eyes off of that goal, we increase the chance that we're going to miss it entirely. Let me ask you, have you ever known someone who quit serving the Lord when he or she encountered some kind of problem in life, some kind of difficulty? It may have been an illness of some kind. It may have been a death in the family. It may have been the loss of a job or a setback of some kind. Whatever it was, what they did is ultimately they took it out on the Lord. And I want to tell you, the problems we face, what they ought to do, is they ought to cause us to want to go to heaven more. You see, one thing that makes heaven magnificent is the fact that it's a place where there's not going to be any sickness. You're not going to have to deal with death. Not going to be any other kind of trouble. All the temptations we face, they'll be out of the way. And we all think about that when we're going through the difficulties. You see, the more we think about where we're going, the more likely it is that we'll get there. That's a principle I've learned in other endeavors, but I think it applies to what we're talking about this morning as well. Have you ever taken a wrong turn or missed the right turn because you weren't paying attention to where you're going? This last week, I pulled out onto Nederland Avenue, and I started driving. Somewhere along the way, I realized I am going to the church building, and that's not really where I meant to go. It's just where my car goes naturally when I start driving. And so I had to turn around and, you know, go back the direction I was supposed to go. I do that kind of thing all the time. And the truth is, all of us have done that at some point. But what we need to see is that we can also do the spiritual equivalent of that if we're not careful. If we don't pay attention to where we're going, how do we expect to get there? And the truth is, I'm not sure that we can. We need to learn from the example of the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt, when they came out of bondage, and God delivered them from that. When I look at what is said about them in the Old Testament, it seems to me that they didn't think much about where they were going. They thought about where they came from most of the time. They were more interested in looking back than they were in looking forward. In fact, Egypt looked better to them than the land of Canaan, as remarkable as that may seem. And the result is that they didn't reach their destination. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 5 says, they were overthrown in the wilderness. They died there as a result of that. Now let me ask you a question. Do we spend more time looking at where we've come from than we do looking at where we're going? Do we spend more time putting down roots here in this world than we do in storing up treasure in heaven? You know, one of the easiest ways to miss heaven is to not think about heaven and to not talk about heaven and to not pursue those things that will lead us there. All we have to do is just keep our focus right here and we'll miss it. If we want to go to heaven, we need to look forward, not back. In Philippians chapter 3, the Apostle Paul would talk about the kind of mindset that we need to have. In verses 13 and 14, he would say, brothers, I do not consider that I have made it my own, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. I'm trying to go forward. And I'm not just going forward, I'm going upward. I'm trying to get there, Paul says. In Hebrews chapter 11, you see that same kind of thing. Hebrews chapter 11, begin reading with me in verse 13. It talks about those who walked by faith. By faith, Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice in verse 4. By faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark in verse 7. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And so he talks about all of these people who walked by faith. And then he says in verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. And therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. They thought about where they were going, not where they had come from. We need to do that. We need to think about heaven. And then the final thing I want to suggest to you that can help us as we live in this world to not be of this world is to remember why we're here. To keep in mind that God has a purpose for us as we live in this world. Do you think we sometimes have a hard time with that concept? Do we recognize that God has a purpose for his people in this world? You know, at the beginning of the lesson, I pointed out the fact that Jesus didn't ask the Father for his disciples to be taken out of the world. John 17, verse 15. I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. And it was the Lord's will that his disciples remain in this world for a time. And again, I want us to see that it's still his will for his disciples today, that we remain in this world for a time. But there is a reason for that. It's interesting to me that there have been groups of people who claim to follow the Lord, and I suppose there still are some around today who thought that the best way to serve God is to kind of run off into some far corner of the world and to just huddle together. And that's where things like monasteries and communes came into the picture. And for those who wanted to get away from the world, those were the places to go, although they tended to be just as worldly as any other place on earth, but that's beside the point. Even if they had been a refuge from the world, though, God has never been interested in his people separating themselves in that manner. His people live in the world, but they don't live like the world. That's the kind of separation that God is interested in. And there have also been people at various times who just got tired of dealing with this world and all of the things that go on, and just decided, you know, I don't want to be here anymore. Moses once made the request in Numbers 11 and verse 15 to God, kill me at once if I find favor in your sight. That's kind of a weird statement, you got to admit. Or Elijah requested the same thing in 1 Kings chapter 19 and verse 4. It is enough. Now, O Lord, take away my life, for I'm no better than my fathers. I can't do this. I'd just rather check out. They didn't want to deal with the situation anymore. But the Lord didn't grant the request of either man, did he? And the reason is because there was still work for both of them to do. And again, God has a reason for wanting his people in the world. And I suppose really you could say that there are a number of reasons for God, for why God wants us here. And we may not have the time this morning to talk about all of them or even to talk about any of them for, you know, at great length. But I do want to suggest a few reasons for why I believe the Lord wants us here to begin with. And the first is that I believe our time upon this earth is intended to cause us to desire that heavenly home all the more. You know, you would think that with all of the problems in this world, we would want something better than that. And so not only do we as Christians have to deal with all of the problems that are common to people in general, and you can just go down the list of things that people in this world deal with. And we see it in the lives of Christians, just as in the lives of everyone else. But in addition to that, we also suffer because of our faith at times. Or at least that's a possibility. You know, I'm not sure we do suffer that much in our day. And that may be one of the reasons why we don't seem to desire heaven more than we do. We've got it just fine here. The Apostle Paul suffered for his faith. And when he looked at that situation and he looked at all of the possibilities, he knew exactly which would be better for him. And so in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 21, he would say, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labor for me, yet which I shall choose I cannot tell. I'm hard pressed between the two. My desire," here's what I want, "my desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better." He had no question about that. "But to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. I've still got work to do," he said. Our experiences here ought to make us want that home in heaven all the more. But second, I think our time upon this earth is intended to give us the opportunity to prepare toward that end. You see, we're not born into the family of God completely mature any more than babies are born into this world fully mature. That's not how that works. And just as we expect our children to grow up and to mature in every aspect, so does God. And that's why Peter would say in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 2 that we are to be like newborn infants and long for the pure spiritual milk, that by it you may grow up to salvation, he says. Salvation is something we grow towards. We're here in this world to do, as Paul says in Philippians 2 and verse 12, to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. That's why we're here. Or as Paul would put it in Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, to be transformed by the renewal of our minds. We don't think straight sometimes. And we need to work on straightening that out so that we can see things from the Lord's perspective and not from the world's perspective. The goal of that transformation is ultimately to become more and more like the Son of God, fit to live with him for eternity. You know, do we use our time in that way? And then finally, I believe our time upon this earth is intended to give us the opportunity to help others go to heaven as well. You know, we are to be the light of the world. We are to be the salt of the earth, as Jesus said in Matthew 5 and verse 13. And what he meant when he said that is that our lives are to have some kind of impact on the world in which we live. It's not just I'm going to take up space here. It's not just I'm going to use some of the resources while I'm here. The point of all of this is that when we're here, we make a positive impact. We leave this world a better place than we found it. That's the ideal. Whether it's by what we say or by what we do, both our words and our actions are supposed to help lead other people toward heaven, to draw them closer to God, not push them away from him. Sometimes they've done that. And we need to ask the question, are we carrying out our responsibilities along those lines? Are we helping those who are within the realm of our influence be the kind of people that they're supposed to be. I want to close this morning by pointing out that the world is a dangerous place to live in. And it's easy for us to lose our focus or to be tripped up by the obstacles that are placed in our path. It's easy for us to forget why we're here. And that's why I believe it's important for us to take the time every now and then to remind ourselves about where we live, about where we're going, about why we're here in the first place. I thought this morning would be a good opportunity along those lines to just challenge you. Let's keep this in mind. And let's put it into practice as we make our way through the year 2021. Will you commit to doing that? I think we'll have a better year if we do. We may have some of the audience this morning here in need of what the Lord has to offer. We all do, of course. If you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, why not do that this morning? Jesus said, whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. That is his promise. If you've done that at some point, and maybe the things we've talked about this morning, the temptations, the trials, the whatever has gotten in the way, the snare of the devil has snapped on you, the devil has pounced like that roaring lion, whatever it may be, the good news is that God has given you another day, and that means another opportunity to make things right. So we want to encourage you this morning. If you have some need along those lines, please make that known to us as we stand and as we sing.